Hello, this is Erin Whitney, the Director of the Arctic Energy Office at the Department of Energy, and we are back with another Minute with Mike, featuring our very own Mike McElhaney, Senior Advisor for the Arctic Energy Office. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Aaron.
So a couple weeks ago, Mike and I were both at the Arctic Encounter Symposium in Anchorage, Alaska, and we had the chance to meet with the Minister of State for the Arctic in the United Kingdom, Mr. Rutley, as well as the British Consul General Tammy Santu. And it was surprising for me to learn that 40% of their energy supply is supplied by offshore wind. And it was even a little more surprising for me that they were there at our Arctic Encounter Symposium. Because we don't normally think of the United Kingdom as an Arctic country. So, Mike, why does the UK, a non-Arctic state, have an Arctic strategy?
The Arctic has always been extremely important to the United Kingdom since the 19th century, in fact. One of the first European Arctic explorers was Lord Dufferin, who was one of the first Europeans to travel north of the Arctic Circle on a boat, visiting Iceland, Jan Mayen, and the North Cape of Norway, among others, and wrote a very successful book in the 1850s before his long political career. But moving into the 20th century, the Arctic was the key linking point between the United Kingdom and its shipping routes to the rest of the world. In World War II and World War I, the Arctic was essential to maintaining supply lines between the United Kingdom and Russia during the World Wars. And during the Cold War, the so-called Greenland-Iceland-UK gap was the major point of access to the Atlantic Ocean from the Arctic for the Soviet Union. With the changes in climate and global political situation, the Arctic once again is of vital importance to the United Kingdom. So they have established a new Arctic strategy and a new Arctic defense framework, which are both available on the internet, reiterating how important the region is to the United Kingdom, both militarily and economically and scientifically.
Thanks. So there's sort of a gatekeeper, if you will,
That's
between
a
the Atlantic and the Arctic.
Yes, it's a good way to put it. The northern tip of Scotland, the Shetland Islands, is about the same latitude as Anchorage. So most of Scotland is about where Southeast Alaska is. It is very far north. And there's a recognition of that among decision makers, both nationally and in the so-called devolved governments of the United Kingdom.
Interesting. So then, how does the UK engage today with other parts of the Arctic?
That's a great question. The United Kingdom is an observer of in the Arctic Council. It's one of the most active observers, taking part in several of the working groups on marine shipping, on environmental conditions, and on scientific observations. And this year, for the first time ever, the United Kingdom, which is also a major Antarctic power, is sending its Antarctic research ship to Greenland to conduct a polar survey in the Arctic for the first time ever, redeploying some of those assets to, again, highlighting the importance of the region to the UK. So Britain participates in the Arctic Council militarily. They participate in submarine exercises with the United States off the coast of Alaska, the ICEX series. They participate in training exercises with the US and with Norway. And they engage in quite a bit of bilateral trade in the Arctic with other Arctic states and
Their energy supply is supplied by offshore wind. And it was even a little more surprising for me that they were there at our Arctic Encounter Symposium because we don't normally think of the United Kingdom as an Arctic country. So, Mike, why does the UK, a non-Arctic state, have an Arctic strategy?
The Arctic has always been extremely important to the United Kingdom since the 19th century, in fact. One of the first European Arctic explorers was Lord Dufferin, who was one of the first Europeans to travel north of the Arctic Circle on a boat, visiting Iceland, Jan Mayen, and the North Cape of Norway, among others, and wrote a very successful book in the 1850s before his long political career. But moving into the 20th century, the Arctic was the key linking point between the United Kingdom and its shipping routes to the rest of the world. In World War II and World War I, the Arctic was essential to maintaining supply lines between the United Kingdom and Russia during the World Wars. And during the Cold War, the so-called Greenland-Iceland-UK gap was the major point of access to the Atlantic Ocean from the Arctic for the Soviet Union. With the changes in climate and global political situation, the Arctic once again is of vital importance to the United Kingdom. So they have established a new Arctic strategy and a new Arctic defense framework, which are both available on the internet, reiterating how important the region is to the United Kingdom, both militarily and economically and scientifically.
Thanks. So there's sort of a gatekeeper, if you will,
That's
between
a
the Atlantic and the Arctic.
Yes, it's a good way to put it. The northern tip of Scotland, the Shetland Islands, is about the same latitude as Anchorage. So most of Scotland is about where Southeast Alaska is. It is very far north. And there's a recognition of that among decision makers, both nationally and in the so-called devolved governments of the United Kingdom.
Interesting. So then, how does the UK engage today with other parts of the Arctic?
That's a great question. The United Kingdom is an observer of in the Arctic Council. It's one of the most active observers, taking part in several of the working groups on marine shipping, on environmental conditions, and on scientific observations. And this year, for the first time ever, the United Kingdom, which is also a major Antarctic power, is sending its Antarctic research ship to Greenland to conduct a polar survey in the Arctic for the first time ever, redeploying some of those assets to, again, highlighting the importance of the region to the UK. So Britain participates in the Arctic Council militarily. They participate in submarine exercises with the United States off the coast of Alaska, the ICEX series. They participate in training exercises with the US and with Norway. And they engage in quite a bit of bilateral trade in the Arctic with other Arctic states, and surprisingly, even with Alaska, with over $50 million of bilateral trade with the state each year.
Amazing. So then, can you shed some light then on how the Arctic Energy Office has engaged with the UK on Arctic issues recently?
That's a great question. Well, as you already mentioned, the UK is one of the world's leaders on offshore energy in form of wind, and we are working on several collaborative steps at DOE to move out on that. We, as you mentioned, we met with Minister Rutley, and there's very strong interest between us and the UK on how we can adapt carbon management best strategies in the Arctic, between our office and what the UK is pursuing, leading up to our carbon management workshop in Anchorage next week.
Thanks, Mike. So then we have to end with the favorite place and the favorite food. Would you care to weigh in on either of those items in the UK, Mike?
Oh. My favorite food in the United Kingdom is whiskey, but I cannot choose between Scottish Oban whiskey and Northern Ireland's Bushmills whiskey. They're both very good. However, my favorite place in the United Kingdom is St. Paul's Cathedral, a truly stunning building that I've been to from the tip of the roof to the bottom of the vault.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for the history, the current context, and of course, all the inspiration on the food and the places. And that's it for our minute with Mike. Thank you so much.